Hello, welcome to Act Inspired Behavior, the show about real people and their real stories of transformation and change told through the lens of acceptance and commitment therapy. I'm Gabby Lanier. Have you ever done something scary? What was it and what made it so scary? Was it physically difficult, emotionally difficult, or both? Did it fill you with fear as you prepared to do it? But here's the most important question. Why was it worth it? For me, I experienced three very scary things in the last few months, all of which I'm going to tell you about right now. In the first part of this episode, I'm going to tell you all about that first scary thing, the recent birth of my second child. You'll get to hear all about the many fears that I had, the ways that I navigated the fear, and why it was so worth doing. In the last part of the episode, you'll hear about the two other gigantically scary things I'm doing in my life right now and how they relate back to this same experience of giving birth. But before we get there, I want you to again imagine your biggest, maybe even scariest decision you've ever had to make. Did it feel a bit like running a marathon? If you would imagine what a marathon would be like, a lot of us haven't actually done that. I've never done that. But these kind of experiences, they describe what acceptance and commitment therapy calls committed actions. These are big, values-based choices that are deeply aligned with your greatest desires, but they might also represent something incredibly difficult. And you might make that decision to, you know, run that marathon, but that decision in and of itself isn't by any means the only committed action that you make along that journey. The committed actions, they continue each moment you stay the course, each and every breath, each step, each misstep, they all represent the overall journey. And each of those experiences is an important committed action that you're taking and making along the way, even those stumbles, even those mistakes. In fact, it's the mistakes that might make the journey more than that outcome that you had set out for. It makes it this continual process that is that much more richer, that much more meaningful. In my journey toward wanting a VBAC, or what they call a vaginal birth after cesarean, I definitely experienced this series of committed actions. And believe me, my commitment to this goal was tested and almost broken. So to give you some context, my first son's labor and delivery resulted in a cesarean section. But not only that, I also experienced a very painful, complicated, and emotional postpartum recovery for the next year. So, you know, because of all this, I was really wanting a different experience with my second labor and delivery. And not only did I want that VBAC, I really wanted to commit to trying to have a natural birth or a labor and delivery with minimal to no medical interventions. But, you know, as any journey goes, I experienced so many barriers for this commitment of a VBAC and natural birth. For example, when I was about 37 weeks pregnant, I showed up to my routine prenatal visit, and then during that visit learned that my chances for a VBAC were only about 30%. And then when I asked my doctor, she told me that it was because my body had failed to progress during my last labor. When I ended up having to go in, get medically induced, I had an epidural, I had many other different medical interventions that I had to do to progress my labor. But I was only able to dilate to about 8 centimeters and not 10 because of all of this and not being able to dilate on my own to that magical 10 centimeter mark, my labor resulted in a C-section. So my chances for a vaginal delivery this time around just weren't as likely. So I remember I left that visit so incredibly upset. I was ruminating just totally in my head and filled with so much fear. I was fearful of having an eventual C-section after trying for a vaginal labor and delivery, fearful of a uterine rupture, which is a medical emergency that occurs that can actually end up having catastrophic outcomes for the mother and the baby. And then being fearful of failing yet again to progress and dilate the way that my body was supposed to. I just wasn't sure also in my mind if I was even capable of, you know, making that level of commitment to withstanding the pain and not having any interventions. And then in addition to all of that fear, I just was having a lot of self-doubt. So what I want to do now is I want to briefly share a letter that I wrote to myself at 39 weeks pregnant. I was attending a two-part yoga and journaling class during that time. And there was this amazing yoga instructor. Her name is Kelly Koh. And then the other person was a content writer. Her name is Kyla Jane Bari. And they both led this workshop together. Kyla led the journaling portion. And so the journaling prompts, they all culminated in a letter, which then each participant reflected on and used later in the yoga practice. The topic was called Cultivating Your Inner Fire. Okay, so here it is. Okay, and just FYI, I'm totally have my baby with me right now, and you might end up hearing some little baby noises. Okay, so here's the letter. Dear Inner Fire, I want to acknowledge the growing strength of you right now and how much I've connected to the desire to birth naturally, to connect to the deepest, most charged, possibly untapped inner strength you represent as a woman. Thank you for showing me that I am strong enough to embrace and accept the pain, both emotionally and physically, during this journey toward meeting my baby. I know that I'm not alone, that I always have you to guide me and reveal and uphold my greatest values as a mother and a woman. I feel you burn the brightest when I am challenged, when I'm feeling intense pain or discomfort. And those moments to come, those surges of labor, you will hold me and love me and remind me that I am strong enough to bear this pain. I need your light to face the fear of pain, the strength of it, the fear that my body will fail and not birth naturally, the fear of unsupportive doctors who don't advocate for me, the fear of a uterine rupture. When you burn out, I promise to rekindle the fire by asking for help, by softening, releasing the tension I am holding on to so that you may rekindle and burn again. This is the deepest form of self-compassion, my inner mother, my inner fire, tenderly holding me, and I can know that the fire has not stopped burning but is simply expressed in a different way, matching my needs. In the future, I hope you remind me that I can do hard things. I can be courageous in the face of fear, that I can hold those two emotions together simultaneously and move toward my deepest desires, feeling empowered, supported, humbled, and loved. And that all of this comes from within me. So today I'm going to tell you about the marathon of my labor experience. I hope that in this story you'll see how I navigated this experience in my own way, strengthened by those skills and processes of acceptance and commitment therapy. You'll hear all about how committed actions played a role in my labor, how I navigated and diffused from fear in a variety of ways, used present moment awareness and acceptance on the pain of labor, how I connected to that inner fire, or my inner mom, as I call it, and how this journey was so much more than the outcome. It was all of the experiences from start to finish, all of the many commitments I was able to make in line with my greatest values as a woman, a mom, and an imperfect human. So let's dive into the labor story. The first hurdle was going into labor naturally. Waiting to go into labor for me was kind of excruciating. It is for most women, for most pregnant women, that is anyhow. But for me, it just required so much trust. Trust that my body would go into labor on its own, in its own time. But around dinner time on Saturday, April 24th, I started feeling changes in my body and became clued into the fact that I was going into labor all on my own. So I'm going to just go ahead and launch into the story. This story is unscripted. I just kind of told it as it was about a week after I gave birth. And one more thing, I also have audio from my actual labor throughout the whole series of events that occurred. And so you're going to hear real sounds from the hospital. You're going to hear my baby. You're going to hear my husband. So I hope that can help you kind of put you right there in the moment with me. So enjoy. As soon as I started having the contractions, I started to recognize that they were contractions, that they were somewhat kind of painful. I started doing some of the breathing exercises that I had practiced in my preparation for labor. And the breathing exercise goes like this. Since contractions are about a minute long, what you do is you breathe in for 4 seconds. I'm going to actually show you how I did it. So I'd breathe in, counting to four, and then I'd breathe out through my mouth, counting to six. So breathe in four, hold it for a second, and then breathe out six. So you're breathing out slower than you're breathing in. And I had learned this from this amazing doula online on YouTube. Her name is Bridget Taylor. And practice this. And she said, by doing these exercises, you're really teaching your body to relax into the breathing. And it gives your mind a place to focus on. Anyhow, so I started doing the breaths. And I noticed that, you know, if I did 5 breaths, that would equal 1 contraction. That was about a minute long. So I did my breaths and I was very proud of myself. I'm like, look at me, I'm practicing and I'm actually applying it. Woohoo. Anyhow, so then my son, so he was getting really fussy and I was trying to kind of navigate the contractions while also trying to put him to bed and get him ready and read him books and stuff like that. And it was just starting to get overwhelming. And I was not super consistent on timing the contractions, but when I did time one of my contractions toward the end of his routine, I noticed that I was about 2 minutes apart. And I told my husband, I was like, honey, I keep timing them and I'm getting about two minutes apart. Okay, now I'm about 1.5 minutes apart. Can you take over with his routine? I think we need to start packing for the hospital. Have you packed your bags? And he hadn't, of course. So he's like, let me go pack my bag real quick. So he packed his bag and then he started putting our son down to bed. So FYI, the recommendation for laboring women is to get ready to go to the hospital when you're feeling contractions for 1 minute, 5 minutes apart for about an hour or more. And as you've heard, my contractions were more frequent than that. I came in my room at one point and recorded myself talking, which I might share that recording with you, but I remember getting really emotional. Okay, so I'm at home right now. It's Saturday at 8 p.m. and I am definitely in labor. This is so weird to say. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. I didn't get this experience last time and I really wanted it. I wanted the experience, you know, I wanted to know what it felt like and I wanted to move through it.
It really hit me realizing that, oh my gosh, I'm going into labor naturally. And I just started to cry. I was so grateful and so, so proud of my body. That trust, that self-doubt that I had been feeling for weeks around my body, I recognized it and then recognized the fact that I was going to very consciously put trust back into my body. It was almost felt kind of like an out-of-body experience, like, holy shit, this is happening and I can see myself in this situation from a bird's eye view and acknowledge that this is the start of a life-changing experience.
This is number 2.
6 minutes apart?
No, they're more like, they're a little bit more sporadic than that, but it's more like 2 to 3 minutes apart.
Okay.
Like 45 seconds to a minute long.
Okay. Okay. And how far away from the hospital are you?
We're about five minutes.
No. So why don't you go ahead and head in,
okay?
And I will call them and let them know that you're coming in. Do you know where labor and delivery is?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I'll call them down and let them know you're on your way.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right,
bye.
Once we realized we really needed to go to the hospital, I said goodbye to my son.
This night you're going to have him?
Or maybe tomorrow.
And he was really excited. He apparently didn't go to bed until very, very late that night. He was just so thrilled. And Grandma and Grandpa had to put him to bed because we didn't quite finish. So then we drive to the hospital.
All right, so we are on our way to the hospital. And my fractions are like a minute, 40 seconds apart from each other. Like less than 2 minutes.
So speak quickly.
I just had one. Which I'm in very good spirits right now.
Do you want to get everything out?
Yeah.
That was a short one.
Oh God, I'm having another one right now. I'm just gonna hold your arm like this.
And we get out, and I'm very confident. I'm like, this is where we park. We park in the green parking lot, and then we go through those doors. So then we start walking up to the doors, and there's a sign that says doors are closed for like to the public entry or something like that. And we both are like, oh, damn it.
It's right through here, honey. Oh shit, it's closed because. Oh god. Oh my god, no.
Because as I will just remind you, my contractions are a minute apart at this point, so it's really slow going, you know. So what we ended up doing was we got back in the car, we drove up to the emergency room entry, went in through there. I walked myself in by myself while my husband reparked. And got ourselves up to labor and delivery. And then we went into this room, it's called triage. And that's where they go ahead and they have you dressed down. They put a baby monitor on your belly and they start measuring the baby's heartbeat. So very quickly, as soon as we got there, within like I'd say 10 or 15 minutes, the contractions went from being very, very manageable, and I could kind of very easily have a conversation with somebody and whatnot in between contractions. It went from that to being excruciatingly painful. I won't lie. It was shocking to me because I don't know what it was. Maybe because my mind or my body realized I was in the hospital, then I could go ahead and go in right into labor, like really go into labor. But I was just thrown for a loop because my contractions were a minute apart. And all of a sudden, I felt overwhelmingly sick. I felt like I had those like flu-like symptoms. And so in between contractions, the contractions were extremely painful. I had to focus really hard on these breathing techniques. And in between, I felt nauseous, tired, fatigued, like I could barely hold my own weight in between. And I felt so devastated because I started to think. The fear kind of flooded back in to my stream of consciousness. And I started thinking, oh my gosh, I am in labor and I have the flu. I have the coronavirus, which didn't, you know, that doesn't logically make sense because I already had both vaccines. So I was miserable. And the nurse checked me right away. So checked me as in they checked to see how dilated I was in my cervix. And during my previous couple of appointments with my OBGYN, they said, okay, great, you're 75% effaced, so your cervix is really thinned out, and you're about 1 to 2 centimeters dilated. And when she checked me, she told me the exact same number. And I was like, what? I've been laboring for, honestly, not that long, for about an hour and a half. I really thought I was going to be 4 centimeters by the time I got to the hospital. I just had this expectation of 4 for some reason because I had been in labor and it just progressed so quickly. And when she told me that I was only still that same number, I was super, super disappointed. I'm going to call out that emotion specifically because that's an emotion that I kept experiencing that felt very impactful for me, that I am very reactive to, this emotion of disappointment. And so in that moment, I went from being, yes, I got this, to like feeling and thinking, I don't think I can do this. This is really hard. So the contractions started getting so painful, like I mentioned. One thing I didn't mention with the breathing technique was the reason why they recommend doing the breathing in and breathing out in that sequence is that you focus on your breath, right? And you relax your body. The philosophy there is that you relax all of the muscles in your body, like except for your uterus, which is supposed to be contracting, and your body's doing that on its own, right? You don't have to like do anything. Your body is just contracting. And so what I was trying to do was relax my body fully except for my uterus, so that I wasn't working out my entire body and tensing up and making the pain worse in a sense by trying to escape from it. I was really trying to fully relax into the pain, but it was really hard because I couldn't relax. Like I couldn't find a position in which I could fully engage in relaxing, because if I laid on the bed and I relaxed, it got really painful in that particular position. And if I sat on a birthing ball, which I had requested, I couldn't fully relax because I couldn't disengage my arms. Like I had to prop myself up. So I felt a lot of pain in that position too. That wasn't a good position for me. And so at some point, you know, I got back into bed. They checked my cervix. They, again, after about 45 minutes of laboring, and told me the same number, that I was only about a 2 centimeters dilated or something. And at that point, I started crying hysterically. I went from being like, I got this, I'm calm, I can do this, to I'm disappointed, to devastated. Like, I can't do this. And this phrase was stuck in my head. I can't do this. I can't do this. It was like a screaming in my head. And I remember at this point in the experience, because I was in triage. So triage is this temporary place they take you when you're not yet ready to go into your labor and delivery room, and they might end up sending you home, which was the case for a young woman who came in. And she got put in the room with me, but there was a curtain in between us. And I remember overhearing their conversation, right? And she was 27 weeks pregnant. And she came in because she had some sort of like spotting or something, which is actually really interesting because I had also come in at 27 weeks with the same exact concern. So she's in there talking to the nurse, you know, they're checking her out, and she said, okay, everything looks really good. I'm going to bring the doctor in. The doctor comes in and he basically tells her, you know what? Everything looks just fine. You know, good thing you came in, but you can go ahead and go on home. During their conversation, during this whole exchange, is when I completely started to crumble and lose it, like lose my ability to have any confidence whatsoever that I could have a natural birth. And I started crying. And during the contractions, I was laying on my side trying to relax into the contractions. And I started to lose my focus. And at one point, I was just whimpering. Had a really, really, really hard contraction, and I started to cry even harder, and then the crying led to screaming. And so before this lady had a chance to leave the triage room to go home, I looked at my husband and I said, I can't do this. And I said, I want an epidural. And I felt so much shame. And at the same time, I was like, of course I need an epidural. I can't handle this. I can't do this. And my husband said, okay, yeah, of course you can have an epidural. We'll ask the doctor when the doctor comes to see us. And I'm pretty sure that the person who was in that room, in the room next, you know, in the room with me, on the other side, had overheard this conversation, and she overheard me screaming and completely distressed and in so much pain, like in the worst pain of my life. And I just remember thinking, I'm like, this is hard. This is what that you're going to experience. Like, good for you that you're going home. Anyhow, I just wonder like what was going through her mind, because to have someone who's like in the throes of labor next to a person who's, you know, halfway through their pregnancy, like what a completely different like place or universe or reality that we were both in. Anyways, so the doctor came over to my side and I was so relieved. I was like, oh, thank God, we can ask him for an epidural. Like, I can keep laboring, but in a way that's not excruciatingly painful. And when he came over, he was so nonchalant. And he basically said, he said, okay, I heard that you want an epidural. Is that right? Okay. All right. Well, you're too early for an epidural, so I can't give you one. And I was like, what? I didn't say that, but in my head, I was just swearing at him, so angry. And I was like, what are you talking about? I've never heard of not being able to get an epidural. It was too early. But apparently, I wasn't dilated enough, and had I gotten an epidural, it would have worn off, or it would have probably increased my chances for not progressing or something like that. I don't actually fully know the reason why, but as soon as he told me that I couldn't have an epidural, I was extremely upset. And then he said, well, what we could do is we could go ahead and give you some sort of medication and then just send you home. Do you want to go home? And I looked at him and I was like, no, I don't want to go home. I don't know if he was saying it to pull my leg, but obviously I'm not going home. I can't go home. I'm screaming in pain. I could barely move as it is. I can't get back in the car. Like, what are you talking about? So he left, and then I was stuck in this state of paralyzed pain and was in that place for a little while. And I'm trying to think of how I shifted, because there was a shift that happened. They told me that I had to stay in triage until I got to 4 centimeters, until I was in quote unquote active labor, which in the moment I was like, what are you talking about? I'm in active labor. Look at me. Like, literally look at me right now. I'm screaming. So I didn't have a choice. There was no choice. I had to be there. I had to experience the labor for what it was, experience the pain. And so I told my husband, I said, okay, I need to switch positions. I need to switch positions. I need to progress. This is now my goal. I need to progress. And so we started switching positions. Eventually, even though I hadn't progressed to 4 centimeters, they said that they were going to go ahead and have me go to my labor room, that there was a labor room open for me. And so they got a wheelchair, and I went ahead and sat down in the wheelchair. And this was actually my pivot point here, because I had tried laboring on the birthing ball. I tried laboring standing up. I tried laboring laying down on my left side. And none of those positions were comfortable at all. None of them allowed me to engage in that progressive muscle relaxation that I was really trying to do. But once I sat in the wheelchair, I was sitting upright and my arms were supported. And I asked my husband to put a pillow behind my head. And I kind of laid my head against the pillow. And then when a contraction came, I started doing my breaths again. and I put 100% of my focus on my breathing. And what I started to do was I was counting my breaths by counting in my head. So I'd breathe in, hold, breathe out, and I would say in my head, I'd say one. And then I'd breathe in again. And then I'd breathe out, two. And so I did that, and I noticed by the fifth breath, though the contraction wasn't over, usually by the fifth breath, the pain would start to subside. And that was when I shifted. And I also want to mention, I still felt those like flu-like symptoms. And so I felt like I also had to kind of sort of breathe into those in-between contractions because it was also very uncomfortable. Yeah. So, and it really felt like I didn't have a break in between my contractions. It was either you're feeling contractions or you're feeling really sick and fatigued and weary. I had my eyes closed the almost entire time I was in labor from then on. And I think actually I had my eyes closed pretty much once I got into triage, like once I really started feeling those really painful contractions. And so in a way, I became very insular, like very inside myself. I know that whenever I do a mindfulness exercise, when I close my eyes, it allows me to really focus on what I'm trying to do, which is to become present to the moment. And in that particular circumstance, closing my eyes allowed me to do my breaths, to focus on my breaths, and to focus on feeling the pain. What I was able to do, I felt the pain come on like a wave. Like, okay, here's the pain. Oh yeah, here it is. Here it's coming. It's coming. Oh, and it would crest. Like the intensity of the contraction would be the most intense at the very, very beginning of the contraction. Like it would spike. And then it would slowly come down. And then after those five breaths, I would notice it considerably ease back. And then it would take another maybe two or three breaths, and then it would go away. And so I became very, very familiar with the pain. And this is something that I do with myself when I'm experiencing emotional pain or physical pain, and with my clients and in group sessions and workshops. We've practiced this idea of physicalizing pain. And what you do is you become so curious, so familiar with the pain, and you also engage in this kind of, you're kind of objectifying the pain in a way. You're like describing it. You're becoming so incredibly familiar with it. So rather than kind of shying away or trying to escape it, you ease into the pain and you become familiar with it. And in that way, you breathe into it and you become very accepting of it. And so that's what I experienced in the breathing and in closing my eyes and becoming very inside myself. So I was starting to understand the pain. It was still painful, clearly, but in the focusing, in becoming, in getting inside myself, inside the pain, I could ride those waves of pain. And I would say my husband, Andrew, oh my gosh, he was such an amazing partner. At the beginning of this experience, you know, we weren't quite sure what we were doing because this is totally brand new experience for us. But what he ended up doing, what was the most comforting was having him hold my hand, having hold my right hand in particular, and having me squeeze my right hand in his hand. And his hand was warm the entire time. And it was so physically and emotionally comforting to me. And so he held my hand, and when he wasn't holding my hand when the contraction started, apparently I would say, and then he would run over and hold my hand. And so what I would do is I would squeeze his white hand until the contraction completely stopped, and then I would let go of his hand. And so that was extremely comforting to me, and that was another thing I could focus on, was holding his hand and feeling the warmth of his hand. At any rate, they had found me a room. So I was in the wheelchair for a little while in the triage room. And then when they're finally ready to wheel me over, I was starting to gain this sense of I don't know if it was confidence so much as just, okay, I'm getting more practice at this. I'm getting a little bit better at focusing on the pain. It's not necessarily easy, but it's a hell of a lot less painful than tensing up my whole body and trying to grit through it. I was relaxing into it and I was focusing on it, and it was becoming more routine for me.
Gabby, we've got this.
And I got a lot of practice because I was in labor at home starting around 7 p.m., got to the hospital around 8 p.m., was in triage until about 11, and then finally wheeled into my labor room around that time, so about 2.5 hours, 3 hours later. Anyhow, so I get to the room. I'm still in the wheelchair, and they asked if I wanted to go somewhere else. Like, did I want to labor in the bathtub? Did I want to labor in bed? And I said, you know what? I want to labor in this wheelchair right now. And meanwhile, still feeling really, quote unquote, sick, like feeling like I had COVID. And my husband, and I was having the chills. So my husband put on socks. He put on slippers. He put a blanket on me. He wrapped me up in layers. I was in that wheelchair for at least half an hour before they asked me to get on the bed. So here's the thing with my particular labor experience was anytime I moved during a contraction and I lost my focus, the pain would go from being this familiar pain, this manageable pain that I could breathe through, to spiking dramatically to a point where I couldn't focus. I couldn't engage in the breathing or the relaxation. I would just start screaming.
Oh.
So imagine if someone were like an outsider were to come in, be a fly on the wall and watch me labor, I would either be look up here completely calm, eyes closed, breathing, to screaming. There was no in between. And so when I got onto the bed to have them check me, the nurse started to check me while I was contracting. I grabbed her wrist so hard and looked at her and was like, "Don't touch me. I'm having a contraction." And I think to them, it appeared like I was completely calm, so they probably couldn't tell that I was having a contraction. I'm not exactly sure, but when they tried to check me during my contraction, I would get so angry, and my husband had to tell them, no, don't touch her. She's having a contraction. Wait until she's done. But when they checked me in that room, they told me I was 4 centimeters dilated. So that was exciting, and my husband said I started crying. And he was crying. He was so happy. We were both just so happy. Okay, this is I'm actually progressing. This is great. My body is doing this. My body is doing what it needs to do to have this baby. And I was really proud of my body at that moment. I got back in the wheelchair for a little while, and then my husband at some later point asked me if I wanted to get into the bathtub, and I said yes, because in my mind it kind of just went, the thought came into my mind that, hey, it probably would be a good idea for you to change positions and try something new to see if you can progress even farther. The idea of it seemed good. It was just like, I don't want to move, because if I move, I know it's going to hurt really bad. So in between any changing of positions was excruciatingly painful. And I knew that I would probably cry and scream. But I said, okay, I know that if I change positions, it's likely that I'll progress faster. And it's more likely that I can have this baby vaginally. So let's go ahead and do it. So I you know, made those committed actions throughout the labor process, and that was definitely one of them. So we got into the bathtub, and I eased myself in very awkwardly, sat down, and I realized that unlike the wheelchair, I didn't really have anything to like hold on to and allow myself to completely relax into. So the first couple of contractions were super painful. And then my husband had this idea of, oh, hey, let's get the shower curtain and you can rest one arm on the side of the tub and the other arm can hold on for dear life onto this shower curtain. And so that's what I did because I was sideways in the tub with my legs crossed. And that was great. And then I had the thought, I was like, oh my gosh, is this shower curtain securely fastened to the railing? And I looked up and the railing was rolled into the wall and the shower curtain had these metal rings that looked super strong. So I was like, okay, good. I don't want this thing coming crashing down. That would be the worst. So I labored that way for a while. And it was actually really nice. The nurse that was there, her name is Hattie. She was very quiet and barely spoke to me. But she was really good at kind of just moving around the room and getting things situated. What she did was she put some fake candles, lit candles. The room in the bathroom was completely dark except for the candlelight, which was so relaxing to me. And then she put in some lavender essential oil, which lavender essential oil is my favorite. So then I labored that way for a while, and it felt really good. Well, I mean, you know, all things considered, it was very painful, but the position itself, the atmosphere was very good. At one point my husband tried to put music on.
After this next contraction, I want to try music.
And as soon as he put music on, I was like, turn it off, turn it off.
No, turn it off.
Yeah, it was really interesting. As labor went on, I just learned as I went, and I learned what positions were comfortable, what positions weren't comfortable, what strategies were effective, which strategies were not effective, not helpful. And I found out that the music wasn't helpful, but the breathing was. The lavender was good, but, you know, sitting in a certain position wasn't good.
Gammy, it's midnight, which means we're going to have our baby on April 25th.
At some point, I think maybe half an hour later or so or more, I was done being in the bathtub. And so my husband helped me up. We walked back over to the wheelchair because that's where I wanted to be. And I sat down and my water broke. And I believe it gave a very audible gush.
Oh, my water just broke.
Hey.
And it was exciting because when your water breaks, it means it just means that labor is occurring. And when your water breaks, it usually means that labor will progress and it will probably progress faster than if it hadn't broke. So after my water broke, after a few contractions, they asked that I go back into the bed and get checked again. And so I did, and screamed through contractions as I was getting resituated. And when they checked me that time, they said that I was 7 centimeters dilated, which was very exciting. So.
Did it defeat that one
contraction? 7.5, Gabby. You're doing it. Love you.
Again, like, I just had that feeling like, I trust you, body, I trust you. I also want to say that during this experience, on just occasionally, this voice would come in and remind me that I was doing a really good job. And this voice is what I call my inner mom. And I practice this every once in a while, this idea that there is someone inside of me, this cheerleader that loves me unconditionally, that encourages me when I'm distraught. And so this voice came in and said, you know, I'm really proud of you. And that was amazing to hear that encouragement coming from within me. So I went back to the wheelchair, and at this point, things were starting to get pretty busy. I remember there was more talking at this point. Like, they were starting to strategize and talk about, like, when to bring the doctor in. And the nurse, Hattie, came to me and got close to me and told me, you know, if you feel the urge to push, you need to let us know right away.
If you feel that pressure, compression or non-compression, let me know. It goes away after the contraction, right?
And I remember thinking, I don't think I said this to her, but I remember thinking, like, how do I know when I need to push? How do I know? How do I know for sure? Because there was part of me that felt like I had to push the entire time for some, I need to push, I need to push, I feel the pressure. So because I was sitting down in this chair, I was a little bit worried that I wouldn't know the feeling and that I would get confused and tell them at the wrong time. And I really, really, really didn't want to get checked again unless I absolutely had to have them check my cervix. And so what I did was in between contractions, I would kind of start holding myself up a little bit to see if I had the urge while holding myself up. And basically what they said was, you're going to feel that urge to push in between contractions as well as during contractions. And so at one point, I don't know how long after that, I started feeling that feeling more and more. And when I eased myself up, at one point I was like, I remember my voice just bubbled up out of nowhere and said, I feel the pressure. Feel the pressure. And so they got me back in the bed, and so they checked me again. They checked my cervix. And honestly, I don't remember this, but my husband did say that they said I was 10 centimeters dilated. But all I remember was, I think I need to push. I think I need to push. I think I need to push. Like, that's all I could think of at that point. And then also thinking, I don't know if I need to push. I don't want them to think that I need to push and then I'm too early. I was in my head again and starting to feel a lot more pain because I was not really focusing on my breath. And I remember kind of losing control at some point and starting to scream and moan. And so things were just really busy, and they started to kind of maneuver things, and they told me to sit in a certain position on the bed, and they were they had the doctor come back in, and the doctor checked me, and he said, okay, let's start doing some practice pushes.
Did she push it all yet?
No. The next contraction, if you want to feel that pushy feeling, you can, okay?
And so what they did was they pulled up these stirrups, and they had me put my legs up. So then I had Hattie, that nurse, this wonderful nurse, on one side, and then I had the nurse from the triage room on the other side, and then I had my husband. He was holding my hand on my right side. And so they said, okay, what you need to do is you need to breathe in, and then as you breathe, and then you need to push as hard as you can. And so what I had done in preparation for this part of labor was I practiced this idea called J breathing. And so what you do is you breathe in through your nose, and then you don't breathe out necessarily. Like, you don't like feel your breath breathing out, but what you do is you start to breathe out by pushing down, pushing down, pushing down until you get to your uterus. And then you imagine yourself pushing, pushing, pushing until you get to the bottom of your, like, where your cervix is. And then you push, 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 like pushing your breath out like a J through the birth canal. And that's kind of like how you're focusing your push. And what the doctors told me was that rather than breathing out at all, that I hold my breath. I hold my breath during the push. And I remember thinking, okay, I don't understand.
Okay, Push against the pressure. Ready? Nice big breath.
They were literally teaching me how to push as I was pushing, which was such an interesting experience. But after several rounds, it was very scary at first. Again, I felt that fear like come up over me. You don't know how to do this. You can't do this. Ask for them to give you a C-section. I literally had that thought. And it was so scary. Fear was gripping me so much. Those first few. So what they had me do was during contractions, I would breathe in and then push. And then gulp air, breathing in, push. Breathe in, push. So I probably try to push 3 times during a 1 minute contraction. And then I would breathe in between contractions. And it was just, I can't describe it. It was so intense. And it was scary to push. As I was pushing, it was so intense. I wanted to resist it. I wanted to back off from it. But what I actually had to do was push into the fear, basically, push into the pain. I guess that's what was so scary, was that the contractions themselves were so, I had gotten so practiced at relaxing into the pain rather than pushing into the pain that it was just this whole new set of fear came over me. At some point, I started to understand what they were asking me to do, and they had me curl into it. They said, like, make your body a C, and you tuck your chin. Again, this wasn't something I practiced pre-labor. Like, it was something I had to learn right then and there in the moment. So I practiced tucking my chin. I practiced, like, holding my breath and pushing. And it was just such a, again, super scary experience. And at one point, I really started to really push into the pain. Like, really, 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 really push. Like, with everything I possibly could muster. And I felt progress. Like, I could feel the baby moving into the birth canal. And then hearing their words of encouragement. Another thing that was really helpful was the fact that the nurse, Hattie, she was holding on to me, and I was holding on to her, and she's on my left side, and she was counting for me. So what she had me do was I would breathe in like this, and then I would push, and she would count to 10.
Come on, Gabby.
And it was so comforting because I had been counting throughout the entire labor. I had been counting my breaths, right? And so this idea of counting to 10 was super concrete. And so I was focusing on her counting. It was so helpful. And so then I could feel myself trying the pushing in a variety of different ways and trying to really push into that space as hard as I could. And when they would give me encouragement, like, yes, yes, that's exactly the kind of push you need to do. I don't know how they knew that I was pushing so hard, but they did. My husband said, I asked my husband, I'm like, what did it look like down there? Just by, out of curiosity, could you tell the baby was coming out or that I was doing a good job?
Daddy, you can see baby's head, 7.
Oh.
9 and 10.
He said, I have no idea, Gabby. I looked, but all I could tell was something was happening, but I wasn't sure what. They had the doctor come back in, and he sat himself down. This was the same doctor, by the way, who told me I couldn't have an epidural. But when he came back, I was... It's interesting, because I remember not particularly liking the doctor, but when he came back, I was so incredibly grateful for him to be there. So grateful. And felt very confident in his expertise. So when he came back, he said, okay, great. She's making great progress. By the way, this felt so reinforcing to have him say that. I was very proud of myself from his praise. Anyhow, so he had me push, and he was encouraging me and telling me which pushes were really good ones and to keep pushing in. And at one point, he said something about there being, okay, there's going to be some really stinging pain happening, you know, in your vagina. So When you feel that pain,
good.
That means the baby's about to come out, okay? It's called the ring of fire. When the baby is kind of cresting and the head's about to come out. And so I felt that pain for sure. And it's not like it hurt so much. It didn't hurt maybe to the extent that the contractions were hurting earlier on, but it was so different and I guess scary. Again, this word fearful, like I felt fear around it. Like, oh my gosh, am I going to rip? Like, what's going to happen? But I just kept pushing into the fear, pushing into the pain. And then there was another series of pushes. So I pushed once, I pushed twice. And then on that third time, I pushed, push. And then she was born. It's really hard to describe, but it just was the most amazing feeling. They had my husband say the gender, and he looked at me and he's like, "It's a girl." It was so wonderful. They put her on me, and oh my gosh, it was instant love. Thank you for listening to my birth story. It's hard to describe all the values wrapped up in this amazing, deeply humanizing experience, but one thing I wanted to walk away with was this deep sense of being able to hold strong to my commitments. You know, I always listen back to each episode several times, thinking about what themes I want to pull out, what lessons I want listeners to hear emphasized. And honestly, it felt like I listened to this episode probably a million times. But finally, I realized the most important part of this story wasn't necessarily the fact that I did get the natural birth and VBAC that I had set out for. It was actually toward more of the beginning of the labor experience when I had asked for that epidural. Do you remember that? It was the misstep that I experienced on my marathon. And it represented this massive moment of self-doubt for me. And it was also a pivotal part of my journey. And the reason is because it taught me that I can fail. I can have moments in which I deeply doubt my commitment, where it feels like what my letter had alluded to, when my inner fire burns out, I can still rekindle that commitment. And so I want to read to you that part of the letter one more time, and I want to see if you can kind of hear it with fresh ears now that you've heard my labor story. And it says, I'm just going to cut to that part there. It says, "When you burn out, I promise to rekindle the fire by asking for help, by softening, releasing the tension I am holding on to so that you may rekindle and burn again. This is the deepest form of self-compassion. My inner mother tenderly holding me, and I can know that the fire has not stopped burning, but is simply expressed in a different way, matching my needs. In the future, I hope that you can remind me that I can do hard things. I can be courageous in the face of fear, that I can hold those two emotions together simultaneously and move toward my deepest desires, feeling empowered, supported, humbled, and loved, and that all of this comes from within me. I can't even begin to express how important this experience was for me, but I will say that because I embarked on this journey, I realize that it's also this wonderful metaphor for me to carry on in the future with future scary endeavors that I dare to dream up for myself. And I promise that I'd share them with you. So first of all, I want to share that I recently resigned from my very stable, wonderful full-time job that I really loved in a school district. It's scary because I loved my job. And it's worth letting go of because I want to spend more time with my kids. And I want to have more time pursuing this passion of mine, this passion of being an anxiety coach. And so second, I want to share that my scary decision to change not only the name of this podcast, but the scope of it as well. I kind of already talked about that in the last episode with Shantae Gold. But so starting next Wednesday, I will be embarking on this journey of publishing this podcast under a new name called The Vibrant Introvert. And the podcast will continue similar to how it is now. It will still be about stories of transformation, but now it will involve the stories of introverts and those experiencing social anxiety. I want to tell you more about it next week when the first episode of season 2 is released. But if you're wondering how to find the new season, just go ahead and keep subscribing to the same podcast you're subscribed to now, and you'll receive it as soon as it's published. I'm honestly just both thrilled and terrified and scared as hell about all these changes, but I know in my heart that it's the direction I want to go, and I hope that you will join me along this journey. So again, I ask you, what is super scary for you right now? Maybe the journey toward navigating this fear will have you breathe into it. Maybe it will have you push hard against it. Maybe it will humble you just enough to garner courage to face it. But whatever it is, don't run from it, not yet, because maybe the thought of failure is scary, but maybe it's also the fear that will transport you to the greatest untapped desires and potential that you have within you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you sound really good.
Yeah.
Feeling really good.
Yeah.
Are you happy?
I'm just so happy. Yeah. I just feel like we have, like our family's complete, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm so excited Matthew gets a sister.
Hi, Mom!
If you are interested in reaching out and telling your story, would like to join our monthly group called ACT Collective, or receive one-on-one individualized support and guidance on your own personal journey, check out my service, Coaching for Vibrant Introverts, which specializes in serving those with anxiety and social anxiety. You can find me on Instagram at ACT Inspired Behavior, or at my website, actinspiredbehavior.com. I'd love to hear from you. If this episode resonated with you, subscribe to this podcast and stay tuned for each new episode, bright and early, starting this Wednesday and then every other Wednesday, under the new name, The Vibrant Introvert. Finally, if you're interested in learning more about Kyla Jane's work, please check out the show notes, which has more information about her work as an intuitive writing guide at Word Alchemy, and then ways to contact her if you'd like to connect.
So why is today a special day, Matthew?
Baby day.
Baby day? What does that mean?
That means that the baby is home.
The baby's home? Yeah. You're a big brother, and you have a new little
sister.
Yeah.
I can't wait to meet her.
Hello again. I want to take a moment and say that this podcast is for educational purposes only. Content and conversation provided in this podcast should not be taken as or replace professional or therapeutic recommendations. As a board-certified behavior analyst, my goal is to disseminate ACT and behavior analysis to the wider public and have meaningful conversations to further explore our understanding. If you are concerned about your own personal well-being, I encourage you to seek out the help of a licensed professional who can provide individual support to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Can you hold the baby?
Okay. Let me move that down a little bit. You got her head? There.
Can you give her a little kiss?
You did.
When is she gonna open her eyes?